Almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loy will be joining us this afternoon. Father Thomas of TaborLife.org, specializing in theology of the body. And we'll talk to him about all of the interesting things going on in the world, as we do weekly. Got a little bit of flack on Facebook regarding my posts of the conversions from the Republican Party toward the Democrat Party. That's not my advocacy of Hillary Clinton by any means, but just the aversion that's out there of Trump. That's what I'm trying to present. So then the criticism, well, you know, there are Democrats who are voting for Trump, which I'm sure that's always the case. But is it with the prominence and the positions such as members of Congress, senators, this is the question. So we'll investigate that a little bit. And also I posted this over my Facebook page. The problem I have with this statement, one of those like jabs of when gay marriage is brought up, Christians that smoke, drink, curse, and have premarital sex are suddenly concerned with what the Bible allows. A few problems with that. We'll get into that as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loya joins us weekly from TaborLife.org. Father, how are you?
Very good, Leo.
So at this point, at least no major headlines, let's put it that way. No major headlines came out of the papal flight back from World Youth Day, right?
Yeah, I know.
I think that's always a success, maybe, or a failure, depending on how you look at it. But you wanted to address some of his specific, comments regarding transgender people.
Maybe the Pope's advisors and Donald Trump's advisors are kind of the same people.
Telling
you got to be careful what you say, you know.
Well, it hasn't worked for either of them yet. So
No. But anyway, the one thing did strike me among many things was, and this would hopefully reassure many people who sometimes wonder about this Pope, you know, is he just liberal, selling the church out and so on like that? He came out very strong and clear against transgenderism.
Right.
But what is interesting about that, and again, from this whole standpoint that I come from, you know, the theology of the body, which I like to say is the answer to all of life's questions, is that the whole point is that if we get, and this was John Paul II's point too in the theology of the body, is that if we get the view of the human person right, we get everything else right. And that meant everything. And this is where the Pope, this Pope, has taken it and been a little bit more earthy about it, or sort of practical about it, where he actually explains specifically what happens when, and this is the point he made a great integration of the two. And he did it also in his Laudato Si, his document there on the economy, on the ecology, is that if you're exploiting this idea, in fact, he called it an ideological colonization, which is a great term, an ideological colonization, because he sees big powers with money that are coming into nations, printing books and things and texts and pushing these ideologies as a sort of a ideological colonization. You know, right. We'd call that brainwashing.
Right.
And he said, this is terrible. And he said that, I'll tell you one name for it. The name of it is gender. He says that in doing that, in trying to obscure this idea of how God has made us male and female. And he was very adamant about that, very clear about that. He said it's the opposite of God's creation. And he said that in this way, it opens a door for the exploitation of everything, including the environment. And that's why he really beautifully in that Laudato Si brought together this idea, this integration, that if you don't get the human person right, if you exploit things sexually, if you want to disorder things in the area of sexuality, and this is exactly what John Paul II was saying, you're going to then disorder things everywhere else, and including the environment. And he said that the exploitation and the exploitation of people is a global problem. It says we're living in a time when mankind, is the image of God, is being annihilated. And, you know, you could see that, you know, you could see the problem. You know, we look at the Middle East, for instance. We look at a lot of what's happened, a lot of what's behind all this. It is one country, one culture feeling exploited by the other. Mm-hmm. And then in a broader sense, the whole Eastern world feeling exploited by the Western world, right, taken advantage of and so mm-hmm. on. I urge right. that. I'm not blaming us. I'm just saying this is how the perception is. Mm-hmm. And with that exploitation then comes the lack of regard for the human person. So now we have these heinous acts being done against human people. You know, going all the way back from the Palestinians and the Israelis, and that broadened then to the whole Middle East, the Iraq War, and now we've got the terrorists, the ISIS things, and it just seems like they just can't do anything more horrendous. They just can't think of something more. You know, you just can't get horrendous enough in what they do. Mm-hmm. And what is that? That is the complete absence of the right image of the human person.
Right.
And what is that? Partly what that grows out of is this their own sense of exploitation. In the Middle East, a lot of those cultures, a lot of these people are asking for is just to have space to be who they want to be, instead of seeing that, you know, this group's got this part of the land that we don't have and it's better than what we've got. They've got the better portion, all that. And they, you know, the exploitation of land, of the earth, is an exploitation of the human person and vice versa. And I think it's really important for listeners to understand, because we tend to be very segregated, disintegrated in the way we look at things. We look at things and compartmentalize them. We kind of look at them as separate issues. Mm. But the whole key here, the whole genius of the theology of the body approach, is that it sees the whole integration of everything. And so he was very, very clear on that. And he said that that the Pope connected gender theory with the exploitation of human beings of the natural world. He suggested that both came from a lack of appreciation of humankind's God-given dignity. So again, this is when he's pointing to a subjective spirituality without Christ. It says that, and that the key is, because he spoke to the bishops in Poland. They asked him, well, okay, Holy Father, what do we do? You know, what do we do in a world like this? He said, and it's interesting, he used John Paul as an example, John Paul II. He said, you got to be close to your people. He mm-hmm. says he took kids up, you know, young people up in the mountains and camped with them and talked to them about faith, you know. Yeah.
And this very stuff, and this very theology of the body stuff, right? I mean, that's
exactly
where it all grew from those conversations.
Yeah, that's a lot of his work in Love and Responsibility, which preceded theology of the body. A lot of that,
right.
It's the type of thing he was doing with kids. So, anyway, yeah. So I think some very, very good things from the Pope on being very clear about the transgender thing. And also integrating it together with the bottom line is exploitation. You're exploiting God's order of creation one way or the other, either in our sexuality, or and therefore also in the environment. And that's why I always say, Leo, that you know, the theology of the body is everything, because you look through everything, you look at everything through that lens. One way or the other, it comes back to that. It comes all the way back to the bedroom and what's happening between man and woman, and everything emanates out from there. It all emanates from there. It starts there. So it was a great, I think, a great integration. I think a great message from the Pope on that.
Mm-hmm. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon. Find out more about him at taberlife.org. And I think it's great, Father, you use this term of exploitation, because, you know, generally, not always, but I think that oftentimes when we hear that word, we immediately think sexual exploitation, right? I mean,
yes.
That's kind of weird. It almost is connective to that type of understanding. And then when humanity is exploited and creation is exploited. And, you know, there's something that we're obviously, at the very least, we understand that there's a selfish, something disordered selfishly. We're doing this for the wrong reasons. And I think you mentioned even the environment, which, of course, you go to Amoris Laetitia. He backs this up on Laudato Si as well. And they're kind of almost companion pieces to all of the things that he's talking about through this human experience and this human ecology and this theme that comes from that. And then, of course, he was roundly criticized as well for his comments about climate change and global warming and all of this. But you think about it, all comes back down. I mean, it is truly, I mean, there is a thematic consistency that is so completely focused on the human dignity element, and anything that's exploited of that, pardon me, is a problem.
Sure. Go back to Genesis. Adam, there was that connection there, just like this, the connection there between sexuality and exploitation of the environment. Eve abused the environment. Mm. Remember, it was a piece of the environment, the fruit, the forbidden fruit.
Isn't that, I mean, you know, I don't know that anybody's ever really, I haven't heard it explained that way, right? That was environmental abuse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but God clearly said, this tree is off limits. Don't touch it, right?
Wow. And yeah, you know, she touched it, but she picked it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and ate it.
And ate it. Yeah, she consumed. See, she exploited the tree.
Wow.
And then what came from that? How does the Bible, the Word of God itself, describe then the order and then also the chaos in sexuality? In terms of sexuality, they looked at each other. They were naked but without shame. And then after she ate, after she consumed the environment, they looked at each other and they were ashamed. They could no longer trust each other sexually, so they had to wear clothes.
I think it would be interesting to hear you make the argument that original sin was all about environmental exploitation. I want to see that argument made and the go ahead and post that on Facebook, Father. See what you get from that. Original sin, here it is. It's all about the environment.
Well, you know, in our Disney spirituality, when we're strong on fasting periods, we actually say that the church fathers even say this, that Adam and Eve sinned because they broke the fast.
Mm.
So they make a specific implication there, too, that it had to do with eating something, with you know, something having to do with plant life, with vegetation, food, you know, was at the center. And the connect with that is the sexuality. So against the whole consumerist, exploitive, which again is that non-sacramental worldview versus the sacramental worldview. The sin of Adam and Eve was they stopped, as we do, they stopped seeing sacramentally. They stopped seeing the created order, whether it was their own flesh or that tree, the environment, sacramentally. And that's the message of Pope Francis. Mm. And he's doing it in his way and sort of telescoping out of, I think, very beautifully, John Paul's foundation, which he focuses on the human person. And then Francis does kind of like what I do, you know, if I may be so bold.
Yeah,
say.
Sure. The Pope stole it from you, Father. It had to be where he got his ideas.
He keeps doing that, you know. but then he applies it then to other things. And certainly the first thing emanating out from the human person would be the environment that we live in.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, to see this ecology as he mentions it, you know, we can understand that climate change could also mean changing the climate of that human ecology, not just necessarily meteorologically. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon. Back after this. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our friend of the show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. Many of the things we discuss, you can discuss there as well. And that discussion could go on for days and days. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon, TaborLife.org. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So we're thinking as we're talking about this created order, the natural order, it, you know, then I think we've got to wrestle with the supernatural order as well, which for me personally, and I kind of had this, well, I'm always wrestling with this, quite frankly, but today in front of the Blessed Sacrament in adoration, I was kind of really beginning to grapple once again with what I often struggle with, and that is this understanding of me as the bride, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
yes.
And I think that, you know, I can get, at least oddly enough, I can wrap my head easily around the concept of theology of the body, man, woman, how that's supposed to work and all of that kind of stuff. That theoretically makes perfect sense to me. What's more challenging is for me as a man to embrace the understanding of being the bride of Christ and having that openness and receptivity and fruitfulness that can come. But I think I kind of all put some things together because I've used the fruits of the Spirit before, Father, as kind of a examination of conscience, right? I'm mm-hmm. often looking at that and say, am I bearing this fruit? If I'm not, there's got to be a sin issue there that's preventing it, right? So if I don't have all 12 of these fruits blossoming and blooming and growing at any given time, then there's a problem. But then I kind of started thinking about how to use that in relation to this experience of being, if you will, and the image that was in my head as I was praying was Christ's side wound, right? This the blood and water flowing from his side, really the fertilization of the church, right? And and to accept that and say, how then can I take this woundedness, this dying, bleeding Christ who has offered everything and turn it into that fruit? So oddly enough, it kind of came around to this, that sort of examination of my own fruitfulness and my own willingness to embrace that, which I don't know, it all kind of oddly seemed to make sense maybe for the first time today as I put all of that together. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. See, Leo, what you did was you kind of retained the analogy, but at the same time you moved beyond it, because we have to remember that we use analogies because we grope to try to articulate great mysteries, and we can't articulate them in a linear fashion, a direct fashion. So we use analogy or metaphor, but analogy is the closest we can get. But still, analogy is limited; it still falls short.
Right.
So we have to take the analogy as like a helper, but we have to realize that the reality even goes beyond the analogy. So to think of ourselves, especially men, as the bride of Christ, we may want to not think of it quite so literally, but take it more as use the word as a receptive one toward Christ.
Sure, right.
We have to be received. Now, we call that, by analogy, that is feminine in its principle, in its fundamental principle. It's not exclusive to women, but it is in its basic character, it's feminine, because their design, again, theology of the body, they're designed to receive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're the penetrators, we're not the penetrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what makes it difficult for us by nature. You know, our bodies,
right.
Again, you see in the body, we act on things, we penetrate, we don't take things in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the same time, we have to take things in the sense that we all have to be receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the girls, the women, have a much more natural propensity to that, and that's why God did first pour himself into them first. You know, they were first to know about the resurrection. You know, they were they're first to see him after he resurrected and so on. So he gives them, womanhood, that special openness, their ability to be a bride. But it doesn't mean that we don't have that or shouldn't have that as a man. It's just that if we maybe look at it as in terms of just a receptivity, a receptive almost like a, or more like a, you know, waiting for commands, waiting for the order. So I'm on a high, you know, and we have to open ourselves up to God coming into us. And we certainly do that in the Eucharist. You know, that's sure. a very bride kind of action. You know, we receive, he penetrates us, he enters into us. And when we speak about ourselves being the bride, we do so as individuals, but more so collectively. You know, the human race is the bride of Christ.
Sure.
And but I think for males, if we just think of it as that, we have to be the we have to be receptive. It won't be in the exact same way as a woman. We have to be receptive so that we can go out and be better males. Think of Jesus, who oftentimes, even like in some analogies, you know, he said to Jerusalem, he looked at Jerusalem and said, oh, you know, he cried and said, I long to take you to my breast like a mother hen takes its chicks. So he himself could identify in that way, you know, by analogy right. in the feminine. It didn't make him feminine, but he right. could identify in that principle. And I think if that's maybe if men could, you know, just by nature, we're not receptive so much by nature, you know, and so it's a little bit harder for us, a little bit like stripping the gears, but, you know, yeah. but still we have to be. And think of the great saints, like the mystics, you know, John the Crosser, that spoke very much in spousal language, you know, and you know, if you hear read some of his poetry and all that, it is very, very much like bridish, you know, in its character. Maybe they can replace that word bride with receptive.
Yeah. Well, I think it's challenging, but at the same time, for me, I think when you look at that in relation to the fruits of the Spirit, right? I mean, the bride of the marriage, her fruit is our children, right? I mean, this is what would come naturally from the union of man and woman, and I think this anticipation in the marital embrace of the fruitfulness of this union is something that is likely always there in the mind of the woman, right? Ideally, I think ideally, you should say, we know that far too many Catholic couples contracept, but I think ideally this would then, because if you think about, you know, when I read the charity, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, generosity, gentleness, faithfulness, modesty, self-control, chastity, these are beautiful qualities of a bride, right? Aren't these amazing qualities?
Shouldn't, they are.
Isn't that what we would, as husbands, we would want to see this? Certainly for you, Father, as a priest, you want to see this in your parish, in your congregants.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially more kindness, goodness, generosity. Yeah. you could really get into some homilies on those. But but I think in the truest ideal of what brides should look like, there's got to be a fruitfulness of that. And to see that kind of fruitfulness come forward in our attitudes, in our actions, I think that's what kind of seemed to click to me today. It wasn't so much about like, I got to be womanlike. It's more like, I've got to be so receptive of what Christ is wanting to give me that it really can bear this fruit. And if I am not bearing this fruit, I am obviously not being receptive. There's something blocking that. There's something I have allowed to get in the way that is preventing that fruit from showing.
It's like a spiritual contraception going on, in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, completely. I mean, I think that's what I have done in my sin life. I have somehow blocked whatever. Right, I have rendered this fruitless. I have said no. And so for me, that's what was really an eye opener. And honestly, what I opened up the office at that point, and I prayed the midday prayer, and I prayed the office of readings, and I said, you know what, whether I'm going to stick to this or not, I'm going to try. Because there have been times I've had very fruitful experiences in my faith walk when I was in the Liturgy of the Hours, when I was praying the Divine Office. And I'm like, you know, I've got to, there's something about, it's almost a spiritual watering, right, that comes from the Psalms. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. As you know, I mean, being a priest, you do it. But for us laity, when we're able to embrace that, I think amazing things can happen. So anyway, it was a pretty productive time in front of the Blessed Sacrament today. Praise God.
Yeah, you know, the fruits of something by its nature, Leo, imply a male-female principle. You know,
mm-hmm.
fruit means something born, something comes from something.
That, right.
Two things come together. You know, the fruitfulness implies that there had to have been a marriage of some kind.
Exactly.
You know, a fecundity. You know, a intimacy that then produces this fruit.
Absolutely.
So, and that's. So that's a good it was a good insight for you, especially that might be helpful for men too, to see how they can be this receptive bride, quote unquote bride of Christ.
And I think that if I have to say that anything critically, I think that's what's missing of a lot of men's ministries, right? Because I
yes,
think that
it is.
There's a lot of this men, you know, and it's
yes.
but what does that do really to show the fruitfulness that can be there of the Holy Spirit, and to say, okay, it's not so much about this aggressive, attack mode of spirituality. It's really this, how do we mature beyond that, really, and mature yes. into this understanding of this receptivity is what really can change the dynamic. And so, I don't know. I mean, I've said many times my faith life is very Jacobian. It's very wrestling. It's a lot of dislocated hip sockets and things of this nature. But today I was more docile. Yeah, you know, I finally reached a point of docility. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's it.
We're out of time.
You know what?
Unfortunately, okay. But maybe we could pick it up next time. But I think that, you know, the more we could talk about this stuff, the better. So it's always good stuff.
Yes.
Father Thomas Loya, God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me over on Facebook. I will post things that we talk about here on the show. Like this that I stole from my friend Kyle Potter earlier that he had on his Facebook page. And the origin of this is blasphemy, I guess is how they would say it. Like, not blasphemy necessarily, but blasphemy. Funny, isn't it funny? To be blasphemous, of course. And the little meme, which is just words, no image on this one. When gay marriage is brought up, Christians that smoke, drink, curse, and have premarital sex are suddenly concerned with what the Bible allows it says. Which I think we all kind of have an unfortunate picking and choosing of the things that we want to embrace. And there's a bizarre... I mean, and I'm sure that I'm guilty of it as I say this, but there's a bizarre degree of spiritual blindness in all of us that we just don't see big pictures at times, and it's interesting, to say the least. But I do have a problem with this on a couple of levels. While at the same time, it almost gets something kind of right. And certainly as we were talking to Father Thomas Loy about theology of the body stuff, this is it. And in a very essential reality that there is a model, and not just a scale model of this is what we're going to build, and yeah, this really isn't the real thing. The model in this case is the real thing, while at the same time being the model for an even more real thing, right? And I think that's what's so amazing. It really is the way the atomic structure works. The atomic structure models the universe, and the atomic structure is not just a model of the universe; it's the real thing. We have the atomic structure. Not that we have to have it; we have it. It's real. It's there. It's undeniable. It's what makes up matter, and at the same time, we've got a universal model that looks pretty much just like the atomic and molecular structure. It's the same theologically, because we have marriage, man and woman, male, female, and we have God and man. And kind of what we were talking about earlier, this struggle, I would assume, and not knowing the dynamic, I would think, only in my limited understanding and vast ignorance, that it would have to be easier for a woman to understand this than for a man. But getting to this point of receptivity that needs to be there to be fruitful, right? We can't have the fruit of the Spirit unless we're receptive to the gifts of grace that God wants to give us through the Holy Spirit. And that's the only way these fruits are going to be a part of our life. So we can't work, we can't produce fruit. We can't say, I'm going to decide today to produce this fruit. No. No more than a tree can decide, today I'm going to try really hard and grow an apple. The conditions have to be right for the tree to bear fruit. Wow, that's what I was trying to say. Same is true for us in our faith walk. But to equate smoking and drinking with, and this is true, I have many Protestant friends who comment on things on my Facebook posts, and nothing against them, but all sin is not the same. And the Bible's clear about this. We've somehow gotten to this point through Protestant ministries that have just decided to equate all sin, because there's that passage that all have sinned and fall short. Well, yes, all have sinned, but not all have done the same sins, committed the same sins. Just, we haven't. Some sins are fatal, meaning mortal, meaning our faith life can be obliterated through that sin, and some sins are just going to choke away some of the fruit that could potentially grow from us. And all of it is bad. Yes, you could say it's all bad, but it's not equally bad. Some sin leads to death. Is it 1 John, the epistle, or is it the epistle of James that talks about this? But it's there. It's very clear scriptural understanding that not all sin is the same. So smoking, drinking, even using foul language, while it may not be socially appropriate, and it could potentially be abused, especially alcohol, and I would say even tobacco products, perhaps, these aren't necessarily sinful. Having a cigarette is not a sin. I'm sorry, it's not. You don't need to go to confession for that. I'm no spiritual director, but I know enough about what sin is. You can smoke a cigarette and still bear fruit of the Holy Spirit. You can do that. It may not be socially appropriate to do everywhere, and there are some who may see that and think, smoking. They may be disgusted by it. That's their problem. That's not yours. You're not in sin for smoking a cigarette. Okay? So don't think that. You can drink. Absolutely, you can drink. You can have a drink and not get drunk. That is not sinful. There is nothing remotely sinful about that. You can use foul language, and I know many who do. I know priests who do. I used to have a horrendous potty mouth. I cleaned my mouth up significantly after getting into radio as a career, because things were slipping, and I feared the $10,000 fines from the FCC. So I made a very conscious effort to not use that language, but using language of that nature in and of itself is not sinful. So lots of challenges with this. Now get to the premarital sex. Now we're kind of going down the same corridor, if you will. Yes, now you're talking about something that can equate, because it is a situation where we've taken God out of the equation. Because there's something very specific, right? There's very, a model has to be specific in order for you to build off that model and say, this is going to work on the grand scale. If the model is not to scale, and we don't understand that everything is functioning exactly as it will when it is scaled to the large scale, we're going to have some problems. Even the slightest, right? Even the slightest malfunction of parameters can cause great challenges when it's built to the larger or multiplied in the larger fashion. So same is true for our model when it comes to what marriage is. And there we get into that word that, you know, that's another interesting thing that we want to split hairs about. Well, homosexuals can't really marry because there's no such thing as homosexual marriage. Well, legally there is, so don't go there because that just doesn't make sense to people. Yes, theologically and even physically, you could argue that, but don't, because it's just not going to make sense to people. Right? Don't even do that. But I would hope, and I know this doesn't always make sense, that we could say, first off, let's understand how level this playing field really is. Let's understand that. This is where I always want to start, to say we are all sinful, and probably the sin of homosexuality, of that, not homosexuality, which in and of itself is not sinful, homosexual acts no more sinful than premarital sex, as is mentioned here, or contraceptive sex, or sexual self-abuse through masturbation, or extramarital relationships, which, when you look across those five categories, almost all of us have fallen into that sin category, at least at some point along the way. So to say that, well, this one's worse, or this one's the same, or whatever, in this little meme equation, we got to realize what we're talking about. And yes, there are five that all fit into the exact same category, all into the same sexual sin category. And the reason why they do is because they destroy the model. The model is now gone. We have no model, because the specific parameters that would allow the model to work effectively, to bring it to scale, now has been destroyed. So we can no longer trust the model. And of course, in that, generally speaking, if we're falling into one of those categories, it's usually a selfish desire to please oneself. And as a result, we're probably not cooperating with grace in the fashion that we could in order to really bring fruit to our life. Because back to what I was talking about earlier, and I think if we really begin to think about how fruitful our existence could be, who doesn't want more of these 12? I guess some would say, well, self-control, I'm not crazy about that. Right? I'm not so sure I really want that much more modesty in my life. I mean, come on. Or chastity. I get it. Some of this we may go, really? But think about the beauty of living in the fruitfulness of charity, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, generosity, gentleness, faithfulness. It's beautiful stuff, right? We could get there. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.